Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was just saying to my team that I want to do a cover of a Donna Summer song live, and I don't know which one, and I started singing, looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. How about some hot stuff, baby, tonight? Woo! So there you go. I'm singing in with some hot stuff, baby.
That's the first guest on the podcast to start with that.
I love being original. But like, she just had those kind of theatrical but diva songs that I think would be so fun to carry on live.
I know you've mentioned over the years Michael Jackson, Billy Joel, other artists. Were you a big Donna Summer fan as well? I haven't heard you talk about her.
You know, it's funny. Like, she's one of those artists. It's like Prince. It's like, I never talked about Prince, but it's like you realize, especially when someone passes, the impact they had. And Donna Summer was one of those artists. Although I did have the opportunity to meet her a few times, and I was in awe when I met her. I mean, I thought she was amazing. She's like one of those women that could have done Broadway, and she just was so legit and cool. And
right.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned Prince, did you ever meet Prince?
I did.
Yeah.
I met him at the time he was not talking directly to two people. He was talking to people through his bodyguard. So I met him at, was it the 21 Club? Is that what it's called? What is it called? You know, the Atlantic Records Grammy party was there. I'm probably getting the name wrong.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
But it's a number. Oh, my gosh. I thought everyone was going to go, oh, yeah. No help. No help from the room.
Everyone in the room is disappointing.
But anyway, it was like, I can visualize where it was, and it was an after party for the Grammys. It was Atlantic's after party. And Prince's bodyguard came up to me and said, Prince would like to meet you and say hi. And he came over, and I was like, hi. And then Prince whispered something to his bodyguard. His bodyguard said, Prince wants me to tell you he thinks you're really talented, and congratulations on all your success. And I was like, thank you. I mean, thank him for me. Thank you. I didn't know who to thank.
the English to English.
But needless to say, it was, even if it's, you know, through the bodyguard, it was a tremendous compliment, and I never forgot it.
Right. And Michael Jackson as well, one of your other heroes?
Yes, Michael Jackson. And the same, like, I met Michael Jackson, and he said, oh, I was just watching your concert special on Disney. And I was like, Michael Jackson was just sitting in front of his television watching me? That still to this day just, that doesn't compute. It's crazy. I mean, Michael Jackson's Michael Jackson. What else can you say?
And I know your other hero, I'll just ask one more. Billy Joel.
Billy Joel.
Your fellow Long Islander.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I remember painting a mural on my bedroom wall to Cold Spring Harbor, when we were living, like, right down the street from Cold Spring Harbor, oddly. And that record always sounded to me like it was sped up. Did you ever notice? If you listen again? Like,
no.
So it might have just been his voice at the time, and the vibrato was very fast. It's kind of got this, like, she's got a way about her. Now, my vibrato naturally does that, so it's easy for me to do. But his voice was a lot trillier, and it always sounded to me almost like it was kind of almost like a hair sped up, like they used to do for certain radio stations, which
right.
would drive me nuts.
Really?
Well, because to me, the key, and I always was like perfect pitch girl. I don't even claim to be that now, because I don't think it's as perfect as it was, but back then that drove me nuts. And your song is a certain tempo,
right.
And it has a very. I was like, I used to labor over that one beat per minute, and so when they gave it that extra jumpy edge to, you know, certain stations just wanted to sound brighter
right,
or whatever.
Energy, yeah.
It drove me nuts.
All right. We've talked about every other artist, so we should probably talk about Debbie Gibson
on
the Billboard Charpie podcast. Thank you so much for coming on, especially because we're taping this on a Friday at around 1 o'clock. You haven't really gotten any sleep, have you?
I haven't. This feels like an old school promo week because I was in L.A., and I had one of those mornings where I was up at 4 and I went all day and I capped off the day with a friend's wedding because it happened to be that night. And I was like, I can do it all. And then I crashed for like 2 days from that. And then the other day I did like literally 18 interviews in one day and then rehearsed with the band yesterday. Did a concert this morning for Fox and Friends and a few other interviews. So we're rolling.
I was there.
I couldn't sleep.
No, you sounded great. I mean, for that energy.
Thank you.
At that hour. Plus, it was about 100 degrees already at 8 a.m. here in New York.
You know, it's interesting. I go through a lot of torture with my voice because I have felt my voice sound and feel really warm, really strong, really effortless. And just as often, I have felt my voice feel really edgy. My diaphragm muscles can get kind of stuck and tight, and like it's like two different people.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's just a thing. It's like I have to learn. You know, I do everything I can to obviously to make it sound as good as I can. But I'm a kind of like uneven person. Like it's like I'm not like, oh, I'm gonna sound the same every day.
Right.
I'm not, and so it's still like a hard pill to swallow to be able to accept that like. Last week I sounded so warm, and then today I sound a little raggedy, and yet you have to just show up and use what you've got.
Right.
But it can be emotionally challenging.
Is it like a pitcher coming in from the bullpen? You don't know, like you felt good in the warm-up, but you don't know how it's going to be when you get out on stage?
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, I literally did not know how I was going to produce any sound today. Now that is petrifying, and all you can do when you're up in the wee hours of the night and you're not sleeping and you're like, my voice feels crappy, is keep repeating, now is not then. You're going to be on the stage and something magical's going to take over. And one thing I've learned is to not over warm up. So like I was so tired, I used to do like an hour long warm up no matter what. And with this I was like, let me just check in with where my voice is and do the bare minimum because I'm going to need that on the stage.
Right.
Because I'm tired. You know, and so like when you're doing a lot of press and a lot of interviews, you're using a different kind of adrenaline. If I had my way, there'd be a singing chapter and there'd be an interview chapter, but they'd like never be in the same week.
I just made you sing an interview within like 30 seconds. Now I feel so bad that I did that.
No. And then what's funny is right now I'm so relieved that thing is over. And because it was probably the first big TV thing I've done live in like 5 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, the last thing was GMA with Tiffany. And I didn't feel amazing that day. And so for me, that stuck with me and I wanted this to be great. And then you start putting all this crazy pressure, you know, but we flew the band got flown in and I'm promoting the Hallmark movie. And it's just, I start to put all this pressure on myself and I want it to be great. And singing on television is hard. I don't know how so many people sound so good on television.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to sound good on TV, especially in the morning.
Well, there are a lot of fans there. I'm sure the energy picked you up, right?
Oh, my God. It picked me up. And I haven't seen it on TV yet, but as a live concert, it exceeded my expectations. I ended up feeling pretty darn good. You know, I had to focus on kind of staying grounded because I'm overtired. But
right.
I loved the feel of that concert because it was daylight, and then in between the songs, you could just talk to people very casually.
Yeah.
And it just kept me very connected. And
right.
I enjoyed that about it.
All right. Well, you sounded great. So
thank you
for continuing your long day by visiting
Billboard. It wouldn't be a trip to New York without seeing you.
Well, Billboard's a part of your history.
Oh, my goodness.
Too, right?
It's the only plaque. I might have told you this before, but I'm not sure. I don't have gold records on my walls in my house. I used to.
Yeah.
I had that whole thing, you know, like, this is not a house. This is a shrine to me, you know. and now I just don't have that. So the only thing I have up is my Billboard Foolish Beat #1 plaque by my Liberace piano. Because that's like, it's musical. It's important and it's like, wow, fans made this record number one and it's Billboard, and I don't know. That's the only thing I have hanging.
Does it feel less like a shrine to you than if you see all the gold records? Is that why you changed that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, like I don't need everything to be like Deb-centric in my, you know, in my downtime. Because it's so like, you start, you know what, when you spend 30 years talking about yourself, like right. you do now, and you reflect, and you're always analyzing yourself in interviews and things, it's like, you kind of start to laugh at it. And then when you read other interviews with other artists, and you're like, oh my God, all these people spend so much time thinking about themselves, and all this introspection, like people really really care. And people do care, but in the overall scheme of life, it's like, it's showbiz and it's cool and it's, you know, it's inspirational to people maybe, but there's also so much more fun right. things.
But that's got to be weird when you meet someone who has feel like they've known you for 30 years because your music has been such a part of their life. It is really important to them, and you
yes.
every first time meet and greet has to be, you kind of have to be on for that, right?
Oh yeah, like today we met, I said hi to every single fan that wanted to say hi after the concert, and it always amazes me that, like, especially because I did a lot of Broadway in New York, so I was at a stage door available to be met for 9 months straight, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
So if someone's like, I never met you, I'm like, where were you in 1997 Beauty and the Beast or whatever, but like there is a lot of first time, you know, meet and greet people. And so today I got to hear, like, one guy was like, oh, you know, I was closeted in high school and your music got me through. And like, I hear these stories and they never get old. And it's this person's first time getting to tell me the story.
Right.
And have me recognize them. And so I'm like hyper aware of that. And that's very moving.
One of the times I saw you a few years ago, you said that was something that Shear mm-hmm. told you, that I thought it was the greatest, has always stuck with me. Fans don't want to meet the celebrity. They want the celebrity to meet them.
They want
to
know the celebrity now knows who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
So people want to know, they want to say, you've been a part of my life. This happened to me and you were a part of that.
Right. And then they want to go tell all their friends, like, I got to tell so-and-so that, you know, it's a whole thing. And yeah, it really, I can see the emotion in the person telling me their story. Like, they have waited their whole adult life to tell me this.
Right.
And it's, here it is. It's the opportunity. Like, I'm getting goosebumps talking about that. Because it is powerful. And the power of the music itself. Like, when we were doing Foolish Beat this morning, I saw this woman in the back. Like, she was at church. Like, she was just like, amen, that is my song, you know, and to get that from people, to think like, wow, some song I wrote is their song.
Yeah.
You know, it's that monumental to them. It's still very surreal to me. You
apparently weren't looking at me. I think I had the same reaction during Foolish Beat. That's my favorite song of yours.
We were going to do it in its entirety because, you know, doing the medley sometimes becomes But Fox specifically requested Lost in Your Eyes. I was going to do that at the end, and they said, no, we want it on the broadcast. So I said, I'll medley them up, you know, and just do the little high points. But it worked out pretty well. But we had the whole thing prepared, and the background singers were killing it.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll get to hear that again at some point.
Right. Well, we haven't really mentioned the movie, which by the time this posts on Billboard.com and iTunes, Summer of Dreams mm-hmm. will have premiered Saturday night, August 27th on Hallmark.
It'll rerun though, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's, we might give spoilers, we might not. You've had your chance to watch it at this point.
Exactly.
If we say
turn
something.
Turn this off, turn this down, yes.
I've seen it. What hit me is it feels like maybe, I know it's not officially a biopic of you, but it just feels like that maybe the most revealing emotional, honest kind of version of yourself that you've put out there, because so much of it really does tie into your real life.
Well, you know, it's funny, like that mattress tour scene in the beginning,
right?
Which, first of all, was shot where there were people. My vote was that, okay, my theory is any artist doing an in-store, even, I joke, like, even like the third lead on a sitcom from the 70s is going to draw a crowd in a mattress store. Like, you're going to, so my vote went to, like, they're a little older crowd and they're not that hip and they're kind of, you know, doing the white man overbite dance or whatever, but there's people. But because in what I learned about movies is because it happens so quick, the stronger visual is like, she's singing. Oh my God, it's a mattress store. Oh my God, it's empty. Like that just, it right. hits people in the gut harder. And so it's a little exaggerated.
Well, that's the first scene where it started. I mean, it fooled me because it seems like, oh, it's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting ready for the garden.
Yeah, you're all dressed up. And I'm like, okay. It felt like it's going to be typical Hallmark. I'm like, oh, it's got the sense of humor. It's very self-deprecating. So I think that's early on that happens.
And I had been with Atlantic Records for the first few albums. And then I did an album with SBK, with Brian Koppelman. And you know, there was a new label head that came in, and suddenly he was like, what's this album? I don't get it. And threw me to do Borders, Books, and Music, which actually ended up being amazing because, you know, it'd be like 500 to 1,000 people like packed into a Borders, Books, and Music. And to this day, I can see the fans' faces who still follow me to this day that were there. Like, right. It was a very special thing. And I treated it like I was performing at Madison Square Garden. I did the same vocal warm-up. I put the same energy into it. And so, to me, to have the character in the movie, the version of me in the movie, and I can't even say character, like the Debbie in the movie,
right.
To show that it was like, to me, it was a sign of integrity to say, I am treating this very seriously, even though it's a mattress store
right.
opening. And I promoted karaoke microphones in Costco's for his Korean company. And so, like, if you're in showbiz long enough, you have moments that are not glamorous and that you better learn to laugh at because they're going to happen.
Right. And you probably can't shut off the switch. You respect the craft so much that if you're performing, you're going to give it your best, whether there's no one there
totally.
or lots of people.
Yeah, totally. And it's harder to perform when there are less bells and whistles. So if you're stuck up on a stage in a Costco and the sound's crappy and there's no lighting, that you've got to be singing like 100 times better
right.
than you would normally be singing, like with your sound man into your fabulous microphone. So it's an interesting thing.
There are a few scenes and a few lines that I wanted to mention because
okay.
it just really hit me as really interesting. And the first one, which I think maybe it was tough for you, and it was sort of, as a fan of yours, kind of hard to watch, where the scene where the record label in the movie
mm-hmm.
drops you.
Right.
And I thought the line where they say it's as if you're getting dropped right now, that Taylor Swift is relevant, you are not.
Right.
Which is just kind of like, ooh, it just brings it very current. And for you to just mm-hmm. come out, for an artist to come out and give that moment where you're not saying, I'm always relevant, the show must go
mm-hmm.
on. You're just coming out and saying, yep, I'm not Taylor Swift right now.
Right. And, you know, it dawned on me. I don't know when it dawned on me, but, like, at some point I wanted to be Madonna, for instance, like, hitting those pop hit bullseyes every year. Like, I need to keep up. I need to top myself. And I just realized that was so exhausting and not really my priority. I was like, you know what? I don't think I need to tour every year. I don't think I need to promote a record every year. It's the most exhausting thing you'll ever do.
Right.
Like Heather will tell you, we did an Asian promo tour for 1 month.
Yes.
To this day, I think I'm still recovering from that 30-day promo trip to Asia because we're like, you know, the day I had today and yesterday, it was, every day was like that.
Right.
It was 4 a.m. until midnight. And then the day off was a travel day where you got off a plane to paparazzi and fans. And it's like, I look at a Katy Perry and a Taylor Swift, and they're doing this all so elegantly. And honestly, I'm like, I don't know. How are their adrenals? Are they fatigued yet? Like, I just really wonder. And maybe they're just, they have a different makeup than me. I mean, I have a lot of stamina.
Yeah.
But I also feel the wear and tear more than I let on. So I guess that line in the movie for me is like, I don't really care if I'm quote unquote relevant. I'd rather be like what's like in the fabric of someone's life than to be like ding, 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 setting off bells. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I see that with Fergie right now. I love Fergie. I think she's amazing. I thought La 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 was like one of her best singles, even though it seemed to be a little under-recognized.
Yeah.
But it felt like, because that was a little underrecognized, she's trying a little hard now, image-wise, and all these things, and I want to go, you're Fergie. You don't have to. And to me, the minute you own that, you've arrived.
Right.
Like, when you're not trying to be relevant, to me, is when, you know, look at Lionel Richie. Like, I don't know how old he is, and he's doing his Vegas strip shows. Like, I want to be Lionel Richie. I don't necessarily need to have the need to be Taylor Swift,
right?
And you know, be on the cover of Vogue.
We just had him on the podcast.
Oh,
yeah, Trevor Anderson of the Charts Department interviewed Lionel. He sounded the energy though he had in his voice. He sounded like it was still his first day in the business.
I know.
He sounded like a really nice guy.
And
too.
That to me is like that. I idolize people like that more than, and I think Taylor Swift is fabulous. But I don't have I don't feel the need to be her. And side note, Lionel Richie, I met him on an airplane, and he said to me, we were talking about writing, and I played him a song, and it was a song that reminded him of Elton. He said, has Elton heard this song? And then he said to me, you know, I said, oh, it's kind of a rough demo. He said, you could hear a good song on a tin can and a banjo.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me forever. It's true.
Do you remember what song it was?
I do. It was Another Brick Falls. I try to run. I try to hide. A thorn gets stuck right in my side. I tell myself it's all a game, but the truth remains another. Because I had that whole piano. It was right out of, it was like the tempo of Crocodile Rock. It was my directly inspired by Elton, singer-songwriter, pound the piano song.
We're going back to anything is possible. We're going deep here already.
Yes.
going deep. In the
deep
podcast.
Down, I feel it. See, now that I did that concert, now I'm like over warmed up. So now I'm going to just sing through the whole thing.
All right, I'm just going to keep mentioning deep cuts.
And yeah.
Just keep having you deep cuts. Sing them.
That's a good title. Deep cuts.
Deep cuts.
Because that's an entendre thing. That could be like somebody referring to a deep cut on an album, that some song that resonated, but a breakup, there's something there.
Right.
We need to put that in the. It's funny, I don't use the notepad. I text myself.
I'm just. Did I just write a song with Debbie Gibson live here on the podcast?
I think you just inspired a title.
Is that what just happened?
Cuts. Isn't that a good title?
Yes, I think
like
it is.
It.
I'm in favor of it.
I like it.
Take as much time as you want, Deb. We will wait while
deep
you.
Deep cuts.
All right. All right. Deep Cuts.
Got it.
Your next album, Deep Cuts.
There you go. That's a great album title.
Look, right.
Gary.
Yeah.
You are just like.
I want my percentage.
Like
the,
seriously, that's a good, you know, I mean, because it fits the mood. I know I've talked about all the stuff that I've been, and you've hear, you know, you're going to be, you keep hearing about this music that's percolating and all of that, but that kind of fits the mood of all those songs.
Right. It like it cuts you deep,
yeah,
right? Emotionally.
I like that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We can cool. Stop here. You have an album. You have a new album to write.
I
apparently.
Like that. I like the title.
No,
and you got to hear one of the newer songs today.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about the music in the movie, the new song Wonderland.
Yes.
As a fan of yours, I feel like I'm qualified very well to say it's a really good new Debbie Gibson song.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really like it. It sounds.
And again, that's. Well, you know,
it's a mix of your older sound with sort of the newer ballads you've done, like Promises last year.
Right.
And it just has a good melody at its base.
Thank
that's
you.
What hit me most.
Thank you. And that's one of those songs I go, because I wrote the, when I was writing the hook, it was going in a land of like kind of an atmospheric dance song that would break down and have that piano thing then turn it. And then, for the movie, it's a little more theatrical, if you will. But so, like, I take a song like that and I go, I'm not concerned about, like, where would this fit into the marketplace? Because
right.
to me, it's, like, specific to the movie. If
yeah.
my fans love it, that's great.
Right.
But then that other song that I did at the end, Home Free.
Home Free.
Like, that song, I would love to find a way to really get it out to the people. I feel like, because this was the first time I did it on TV, but I've done it 3 times now.
Okay.
And anytime I've had people crying, I've had people, I feel the connectedness to the people when I do that song, and I feel like I don't want to waste throwing it out there.
Right.
So it's an interesting. So from your viewpoint, where would you? How would I? What would I?
Well, it's what's interesting about that is it's sort of a political song, right? That's not something you're known for lyrically. So that was thinking, oh, you've gone political on a song. That's new.
I mean, it's political, yet it's, you know, it's really. Well, yeah, I mean, I say when the tax man's coming at you, wolf beating down your door. Because I think so many people are, I have so many friends that say to me, oh my God, I'm so broke. And I always say, you're not broke, because that implies you're broken. You're having financial challenges. Let's rephrase.
Yeah.
Because, again, the song really points out again, what the government can't take from you, or what your employer can't dictate about how you feel or who you are. Or, and so many people get their value from money, and they feel like the bank takes their house and they're worthless and they're homeless.
Right.
They're not. They're houseless. You know, and
the same thing if you lost a job. The things we tie to our self-esteem, but obviously money is different.
Right.
Because on the level of having to live comfortably.
I feel like if everyone thought, even if they're not self-employed, like if everyone thought of themselves as being self-employed, like I am me and I'm an entity and I'm bringing my value to a company as opposed to hire me. Even in I try to stay away from saying I'm going to pitch something. Like I pitched that to Hallmark because it puts you in some vulnerable like me position,
right?
As opposed to I presented this to Hallmark as if to say, do you want it? Do you feel it? And if you don't, I will present it elsewhere. You know, it was lovely. Hallmark was the first choice home for this project and the first place we went, and they instantly connected and it was so cool.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I want to ask you another line about the movie, but since we were just talking political, people probably know you were on Celebrity Apprentice.
Yep.
Donald Trump was then the host.
Yes, he was.
Any thoughts on him then, now? Anything you want to tell us about what you thought of that experience?
For sure. I mean, one thing's for sure I've learned, like, it's so funny because anytime I've even paid him a compliment on Twitter since he's been campaigning, it creates a firestorm that I'm never ready to deal with. I'm like, But, yeah, so I will just speak on the man. I mean, the man I met was gracious. He was professional. He was, what you see is what you get. Very fearless. Yes, he could be a little bit abrasive. I'm a New Yorker, so I don't mind abrasive, and I prefer someone being how they are to being someone else behind your back.
Right.
That's me. And that's a lot of, other showbiz towns. It's not New York.
I think he was just happy that you and Aubrey O'Day were going at it. Oh, I know you guys are
oh, my goodness.
Are you friendly or not?
I haven't spoken to her in ages, but yes, we left off on kind of, I was, her big sister all of a sudden. I don't know. She literally was like, I don't know, I'm on reality shows all the time and I just forget myself and you're just supposed to play this game. And I believe that because she kind of has grown up on reality television.
Yeah.
And now I think she's on Big Brother, which I've been invited to do, and there's not enough money in the world. Like, even with Apprentice, I was like, this isn't a version where they're like in your hotel room, or because just the whole idea of not having privacy,
right?
Oh, would drive me crazy.
Yeah, it was at least based on the activities you were doing on the show, and it also raised a lot of money for charity.
Yes,
so that was
it
good.
It did. Yeah, and the celebrities like get paid. I mean, if I said the number, some people might go, "Oh, that's you don't." By the time you pay your lawyer to review the contract, your agent, your manager, and you get some wardrobe for the show, the money's gone. So it truly is for charity,
right?
And you give up any money you might have been making for those couple of months you're participating in it. So I couldn't have done it if it didn't have that charity angle, I never could have justified doing it.
Was it a fun experience, though?
It had its moments. I mean, I'm glad I did it to say I did it, but I don't think I would want to do anything like that again. Again, it's like we were just having this conversation in the car over here, even about, like, just other parts of entertainment that I would or wouldn't want to do. I really like using my skills. I really like using the craft of acting or the craft of producing or the craft of singing and then going home. You know, like I just, I just don't want to be in showbiz to be in showbiz. My boyfriend has a saying, he goes, you can be in showbiz, but that doesn't mean you need to show your biz.
But that's something that takes time, right? When you were 16, 17, that's something that takes years of doing this to come to that realization and that place within yourself.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, when you first start in pop music, there's so much stuff that comes your way as you need to do this to sell a record. And so you care so much about, it's like a mother that would take a bullet for her child. You're just like, I'll do anything to get this music out to the people. And then you start realizing, wait, all this stuff has nothing to do with music, though, and it's weird, and these endorsements aren't congruent with who I am. And the more you do that, the more it chips away at you, and you realize, like, it's, you know, for me, I can't do it. I've been approached to endorse products even in the last few years. It's like, I'm very health conscious if it's not in keeping. And that doesn't even mean I wouldn't promote, like, a Snickers bar, because actually Snickers has, like, a good, like, it's chocolate blended with nuts blended. And there's a – but if you, like – tell me to endorse some product that's made from ingredients you can't pronounce that are not real, that are chemical, that are poisoning America, making people addicted. I can't do it.
Right. Yeah. And also, I should mention, I know you've fought Lyme disease. And one of the things that I was thinking this morning when you were performing is how the energy you had. And I know you've said other interviews that you're 80-90% better at this point.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. And I said this in an interview the other day with Access Hollywood. I said, now, like, for instance, when I couldn't sleep last night and my nervous system was going kind of crazy, I was like, am I just nervous? Am I overtired? Is this fallout from the Lyme because my stamina is not fully back and my adrenals are a little fatigued from, you know, dealing with this thing in my body for 3 years? And so I don't know those answers totally. I do think I'm still rebuilding. So I don't feel like I'm like a person walking around with, you know, some infectious disease right now. That's not how I feel. And actually it shows as clear on tests and people.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And people that are like, oh, I hear you can never clear it. I'm like, la, 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 la. Why not? And even if it is lurking and if your immune gets low, it comes back. I'm going to choose to imprint the picture of the lab result that says I don't have it.
Right.
And move on. And just, like I said, I do realize that a lot's changed. I'm, like, left with a lot of fallout. So there's food sensitivities, and there's some nervous system stuff, and my life's not quite the same. And it may be, or it may not be, and it might have been this way anyway, just from doing what I've been doing for so long. Like, I always equate it to athletes. Athletes are, like, they retire after, you know, what, 10 years or however. Again, when you look at like a Madonna or a Tina Turner or Dolly, who's just gone on and on and on, I don't think people realize how much of a marathon
that is.
That's
true. Yeah, the athleticism involved in doing shows and keeping yourself in shape for that.
In shape, like physically, mentally, emotionally. And like you talked about Lionel Richie, having that like fresh energy every time you promote something. And I mean, it's a happy kind of exhaustion, but make no doubt about it, it's exhausting.
Right. In the movie, I'm just spoiler alert, so if you've listened this far and you haven't seen the movie, pause it, go watch it, come back. At the end, you get offered a major label record deal again after from the same label that dropped you, and you turn it down.
Yep.
And I was wondering if the real life Debbie Gibson was suddenly offered to come back on Atlantic or any other label today. What are you doing in real life?
But actually, that did happen. I'm not going to say the label name out of respect, but it, you know, I had a situation where, and I have friends that are artists on this label, and I had a situation where, you know, I started making a record with this label. I did the photo shoots. I was being flown on the jet. I mean, and this was maybe 10 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. And, you know, there is an allure to all of that. And then it started getting back to that same reason why me and Atlantic parted ways, which was like, again, somebody was just like, they had this vision for me. And again, I'm like, oh, my God, I've been doing this too long for me to see to carry out your vision.
Right.
Like, go get some chick that's a blank slate.
Yeah.
And, you know, puppeteer. And I was spending a lot of excess energy making the head of the label feel like, you know, they were coming up with all of the ideas. And it was this whole, that's what I can't do in my life and in my career, is expend excess energy on BS, political, ego stroking. It's like, look, you hire me for my, that's why I loved working with Hallmark, because like they hired me for what I bring and I went to them for what they bring. And there was this mutual dance going on at all times.
Right.
And there was never like a, well, my opinion trumps your opinion ever. Like, it was always a discussion. Well, our audience would like to see this. Well, that's not really in keeping with, and there was always some decision that made everybody happy at the end.
Right.
And that was the right decision. So, yeah. So I have had that moment where I've said, you know, you can take this contract, and I'm totally fine walking away. And I love the line where my manager says, where he's like, who do you think you are? And my manager says, she's Debbie Taylor. And when you're out of a job, she'll still be Debbie Taylor.
Right.
And that's what I meant about Fergie before. Like, people that have created this thing for themselves, it's like, nobody can ever take that away. There's no contract, you know, having a contract, not having a contract, doesn't matter. And the line I added in that moment, which was really important to me, I didn't want it to be like, oh, I'm just leaving the music business and I'm going to go teach kids. I went, wait, why can't I do this on my terms? Why can't I tour in the summer?
Right.
And mentor these kids and make, you know, record in Ohio if I'm enjoying my life there. And so that's where I have come to, is like, you know, we now live in a world where you can do showbiz on your own terms.
Right.
And have a balanced life and not be kind of that, like, beholding, like, you're offering me a deal, I've got to take it.
Right.
You know?
Well, with you, too, especially, you are one of the artists who own your own songs in terms of having written them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not every
right.
artist has that legacy, and,
right.
and I'm not sure you ever get enough credit for that, for having written these songs, a lot of them, on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So did you get pressured to write with other people, like, once after the first couple albums?
Yes, and that's when I wrote with Sturkin and Rogers,
right.
which was, by the way, a totally amazing, joyful experience. Like, I would go write with them again in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like, I spoke to Evan Rogers a couple of years ago, maybe, and I mean, those guys are amazing. But I always say, like, the Body, Mind, Soul album, when I wrote with them, it was this great album that had nothing to do with who I was at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like when I performed Losing Myself like 2 years ago in Chile, I was like, I get this song now. Now I can stand behind this song with
right.
all my life experience and really commit. But I couldn't do that at 21.
Right.
So, yeah. They
great,
were,
great I'm, song, though. I always loved that
thank
song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do, too. And again, I appreciate it more now.
Right.
Back then, I was playing dress up. And the audience was like, why is she playing dress up? She was just on our level a minute ago, and now she just went off and tried. It was that trying to be something.
Yeah. Wasn't there a picture of you on, was it the Anything Is Possible album with, like, a leather jacket, the biker look?
Yeah,
so the
yeah.
image changed a little bit.
Yeah, and it was, I was being kind of pushed and nudged in that direction. And I understand it. It's just a lot easier of an image for a label to promote.
Right.
They have to get more creative when an artist is really authentic and quirky and maybe not selling sex, you know? And the funny part is, it's like, guys, if you would have waited just a little bit longer, like, I would naturally evolve into that. But for me, that evolution happened at like 28. It didn't happen at 21.
Right.
It just didn't. And so they were impatient and I just couldn't keep going that direction. But yeah, I mean, they were just like wanting me to write with urban writers at that time.
That was what pop music was in
yeah.
1993.
But see, it
then.
Was also Wilson Phillips. And I had a bunch of songs. In fact, you're going to sing again. I remember a song I had, show me the way that I can find you. I am the one, need I remind you. I am the keeper of all your dreams. Da, 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 da. It was very whimsical. It was kind of Wilson Phillips-y. Phil Ramone produced it, which was amazing.
Right.
And I have that. It was never released, and I have it somewhere mastered and everything. And they were like, no, it's just too white bread, basically. Right. And I'm like, I'm from Merrick. I am white bread. Like, I do dance and we can remix stuff, but, you know, you're not going to be feeling me in the ghetto. Let's face it.
Well, pop music hit a real wall in the early 90s. It was grunge and rap just kind of squeezed mainstream
totally.
Pop
up. But what's funny about what I just said, Neil Pogue later on, he and I wrote a song together, that, and I still want to work with him. He's amazing. And he actually said to me about the song we did together, which was like, I just want to wear your love. It was a very sensual song. And he actually said, they're going to be feeling you in the ghetto with this song.
Yeah.
But that was me at 30-something, not trying to be something, right, but really feeling the essence and the soulfulness of this song. And again, that's when that connects in unexpected ways. But if you try to do it, people get kind of insulted, I think.
As someone
gets insulted,
right? As someone who's written most of your hits, or at least most of your recorded songs,
by yourself,
by yourself with no other co-writers for the most part.
Lamont Dozier was "Anything Is Possible."
Right,
that's the only co-written hit.
Right. Yeah. But we've analyzed. And I've brought this up on the podcast before, but I want to get your take on how, if you look back on the Billboard Hot 100 in the 70s and 80s,
mm-hmm,
about half the chart songs were written by one person.
Right.
And as you go every decade since, it gets less and less, to the point where, I don't know the latest, but it's like 21 Pilots now are the only songs written by one person.
Right.
What's your take on writing alone versus collaborating?
It's like eight people wrote J-Lo's booty song.
Right.
That's a lot of pieces of booty. I think like there's this ego involved in publishers and labels putting people together in a room, and it becomes like a songwriting party.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a major publishing company that I met with a few years ago, and I played him all this stuff, the new stuff. He's like, "Oh my God, this stuff's amazing." And he said just what you said. He goes, "Nobody sign somebody to just write by themselves anymore."
Right.
The only place it happens is really in Nashville, and
not even as much there now.
Right.
That's
and he,
changed
you know,
as
he
well.
Said, you know, he said back when it was you and it was Richard Marx and it was George Michael and everybody, there was a single writer. He said now I'd actually have to say, well, do you plan on just living in LA and kind of giving up your touring career, because I'd need to be able to call on you and say, hey, Flo Rida's coming in today. Can I get you in on the session with Flo and this one and that one and that one and that one? And again, my shoulders kind of went up and I went, oh, that just sounds like a whole lot of politics and a whole lot of like, I don't think music's meant to be analyzed to that degree by six people.
Yeah.
Like, I do think, you know, I've written with friends and it's fun and you do come up with things you wouldn't have come up with on your own, and there's value to co-writing, to collaborating. But I don't like the forced collaborations and the whole idea of like, we got to get this hit maker in on it. And we got to, because there's probably, some artists that would just come up with something great on their own and it would just not even be looked at or counted, because it's like, wait, we didn't put our hands in it and there's no mystery to it, so it can't be good.
Right.
But back then, it was like there was no mystery to it. I wrote it in my bedroom at 3 a.m. and 10 minutes, bam, it was a hit. Because it went from my bedroom to those teenage girls.
Right.
And there was nothing in the middle.
Other than Deep Cuts, which we just co-wrote. That collaboration. There's no problem with that.
Oh, my God. You know, so sometimes I'll be hearing something in my head, and I'm, like, singing along like it's a song I know from the radio, and I go, that's not from the radio. That's my channel that I'm supposed to write down, and I have to write it down. And, you know, a lot of times it happens when you're half asleep and you're, like, trying to pull yourself out of that semi-conscious state and to go, and because it'll be gone.
Which is kind of what you're in now, because you haven't slept.
I am totally. That's why you're getting,
it's
like,
a good songwriting session.
One of the most fun states to do an interview with, because I'm so unfiltered and cuckoo birds. I'm just, hey, it's coming to me and it's coming out. So enjoy that, Gary.
I will, for the next question, because I wrote this line down from the movie as well.
Yeah.
Where one of your, so in the movie, you're teaching kids.
Yes.
And one of them is singing, and she's a little diva in training,
mm-hmm,
and she's doing the arm gestures,
mm-hmm,
and you say, the character says, lose the hand gestures, Mariah, we ain't directing traffic.
Right. I know, I ad-libbed the Mariah part once. I said, you know, like, we already have a Mariah. But yeah, really, Mariah's known for those, you know, she conducts herself. I love that too. Like, I love that she has, you know, one finger to her ear where she's like, listen, she's a true singer. She's just a true vocalist. And I love that about her. Like, she's like, it's like she's visually seeing her riffs in front of her and she's conducting herself. But it's like her signature thing.
So it's not a diss. It was a playful.
Oh, it was so not a diss. Oh, yeah. Totally. Like, it's, but to me, it's just Mariah's thing. She put a stamp on it. Yeah.
The yeah, the whole movie, and the other thing people might think, oh, Debbie Gibson's in movies now. She's totally transitioned. But you were saying before how you just kind of feel like all different parts of showbiz, they're sort of more connected than you might realize.
Totally. I mean, I started in musical theater as a kid where I was singing, dancing, acting together all the time. To me, that it was one and the same thing. It was like you're just being creative and you're performing and you're learning all the skills you need to do anything you want to do. So it really is, you know, I mean, I was doing extra work in movies when I was a kid. I loved being on movie sets. And what I realized about myself, and this could change, like, this could change. With this movie, I realized, like, okay, it was like when, was it Julia Roberts? She went and did, like, an Irish period piece or something. Like, okay, she's a great actress, and she can go do that, and she's going to be great in it. But, like, ultimately, I want to see Julia Roberts playing a version of Julia Roberts in everything she does.
Right.
You know, I want to hear her Julia-isms and, you know. So for me doing this movie, I felt like, yes, people came to see me in Cabaret, and that was, like, for me, some shining acting moment. But that's not ultimately how people, like, if they had to choose how they wanted to see me, it's going to me, be in something like this.
Right.
Where I'm ultimately bringing myself, my experience, and my world to people, and to people who grew up with me, and in the way it connected us to begin with.
It also, it feels like that's a lot of entertainment now, like Louis C.K. playing a version of himself on Louis, or Larry David.
Yeah, I mean,
comparing you to Larry David.
But I mean, look at Charlie Sheen was brilliant on Two and a Half Men. He was being Charlie Sheen, and nobody, to me, when somebody's playing something that nobody else could have gotten cast in,
right?
Like, that's the magic.
Is it tougher to play a version of yourself as opposed to, like, in a musical, totally get lost in a completely different character?
Yes, it's a great question. It is. Like, especially, like, me, the Debbie at the beginning of the movie, who's, like, totally self-absorbed, who, you know, at some point, I'm sure, was totally like that, but why would I want to go back there? So when it's like, you know, oh, my God, I got you presents, and I hand her, you know, my makeup kit with my picture on it, and, like, yeah, there was, I'm sure, a time where I was like, here's a bottle of electric perfume. I hope you like it. And it's like, you know, and the joke in that, too, is that, like, I'm buying my younger sister these, like, Louis Vuitton shoes that she's a vice principal. When is she going to wear them?
Right.
Like, when you get famous, especially early on, I think, you start buying people gifts that you think they should have and that you want them to have, and that it has nothing to do with what they want. You know, and so to show up at my sister's house and be like, vacay, even those little moments to try to make them real, right, was actually more challenging. It was easier to be the me in some other parts that was more low-key, even when I'm, like, in the bunk beds talking with the little girl, and we're, like, those moments were more real to me.
Right. What was, not to go too deep into it, but was a lot
deep
of that
cuts
from your, that wasn't a promo for it. Was there a lot, were there times growing up where you felt there was the line about your sister says she doesn't want to be in your shadow? Was that played up a little bit in the movie, or was that also sometimes
that's
in
totally
real life?
True. My sister Denise used to totally disown me, but because she was so tired of being Debbie Gibson's sister, she wanted her own identity, and she was actually quite shy, so she didn't, you know, and I named the character Denise in the movie after my sister Denise. And, yeah, you know, Denise, it'd be like, oh, they don't know you're my sister? And she's like, no, I use my married last name at work because I don't need, she just doesn't need the hassle of, like, people having some, oh, my God, or really? That's what, I mean, who wants all of that, you know, baggage, if you will? It's baggage. And so there's the scene where I'm like, you know, I felt really guilty my whole life and I ruined your childhood, and I had that conversation in real life with my sister, and my sister's reaction was like, oh my God, you didn't, it wasn't your fault, you were a kid and I was a kid and you were doing what you love to do, and yeah, I was jealous that mom was with you more of the time. So, like, in that part of the movie, I'm gonna have to totally distract my mother when she's watching it because it's all she's gonna remember about the movie. She's gonna go, I did not leave Denise alone, she was not raised by a housekeeper. But the truth of the matter is, if somebody is in showbiz in a family and the mother's managing them, the other kids are going to get the short end of the stick. It's just, it's the way it is. And look, my sister's also lived a really great life. You know, they got to go to, you know, my younger sister got to go to her choice college and live in a house, not a dorm. And
You said that in the movie, too. You might not think, oh, they got to do things that I didn't. It's not, the spotlight's not just on me. They got to do normal, things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a heartwarming movie. I think fans of yours will definitely feel like it is. They're seeing you.
And apart from the showbiz thing, it really is just about a woman who finds herself and finds that, you know, perception and this picture of life is not necessarily the be all end all. And, you know, there's value in actually connecting with people and making a difference in maybe what seems like a smaller way, but it's a big deal. Like when I did my youth mentoring in camps, or when I'll do a Skype session with a kid and work on their song with them, I'm empowering something. Like I feel like I'm sending a little soldier off, you know, I have this little army of kids, and it might not be on the biggest scale as The Voice, but it's on my scale. It's very important. It's powerful to be a part of a kid's musical development. It's a very powerful thing. So, but it's not public. So that's the beauty in this, is that, you know, my character, me, Debbie, in the movie, finds, oh, there's more to life than me.
And, right. And that may sound sort of cliche, but just you talking about it and you see it in the movie, what really isn't many better lessons than that. And that just comes with experience, learning to appreciate the simple things. Maybe as simple as that.
Yes.
All right. Well, Debbie, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
On the podcast, we'll wait for the new – while we're waiting for Deep Cuts to come out, are you actually working on a new album at some point?
I am. I still haven't gone into the studio and had that magical moment where I'm like, okay, I'm starting, you know, I'm really delving into this now. And as you know, there's all different ways to do it now, getting the fans involved or doing it independently, or so just still weighing all those options too.
All right. And for everyone listening, this is posting on August 31st. It's your birthday.
Oh, my birthday.
So happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. What was I saying about me? Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. And many more. Thank you and good night.